The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 3, text number 21, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on November 22nd in Amsterdam, Netherlands.
So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Chapter number 3, Karma Yoga, text number 21. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yad yad acharati shrestastattareve torojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastadanuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues, purported by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the people to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said, the teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called acharya, or ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of shastra to teach the common man. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. The revealed scriptures, like Manu Samhita and similar others, are considered the standard books to be followed by human society. And thus, the leader's teaching should be based on the principles of such standard shastras. One who desires to improve himself must follow the standard rules as they are practiced by the great teachers. The Srimad Bhagavatam also affirms that one should follow in the footsteps of great devotees. And that is the way of progress on the path of spiritual realization. The king, or the executive head of a state, the father and the school teacher, are all considered to be the natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with standard books of moral and spiritual codes. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Nino Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So, this is one of those exciting features of the Krishna consciousness movement. It has been given the mandate by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The members of this society, the Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. The ISKCON devotees have been mandated by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada that they must become ideal examples for the human society. They must become acharyas. This is the order of Srila Prabhupada. The wonderful thing is that the more that we can actually have acharyas in our society, those who are strictly following, who are living embodiments of the scriptures, you see, the more that we can have this caliber of members in ISKCON, they will have a revolutionary impact on this planet. There's actually nothing more exciting than to be a spiritual revolutionary. There's nothing more exciting. To be someone whose whole existence is preaching, spreading Krishna consciousness. Every moment has meaning and purpose. That one is constantly trying to purify one's own heart. The same time is trying to do everything possible to spread this movement and to push it forward. Actually, the qualification to do that is to feel very disqualified. This is the statement of Srila Prabhupada in Nectar of Devotion. Rupa Goswami says that I'm just trying to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world, but I feel completely unfit to do so. Prabhupada explains this should be the attitude of all the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement. So this is a very, very potent instruction of His Divine Grace. Of course, they're all very potent, but this one is especially potent. That those two things go hand in hand. Feeling disqualified, on the one hand, and spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, those go together. So the more that we can feel that we're not qualified and just trying to do a humble service to please our spiritual master and the previous acharyas, that is an acharya, you see. Someone who is completely humble, instrument in the hands of the previous acharyas, that person also is acharya, as described here in this verse, 3:21 Bhagavad Gita. Such a person has a powerful impact on the world, as described by Krishna. Whatever action he performs, the common men follow that. He inspires everyone by his practical actions. Whatever standard he sets, all the world pursues. So we have a revolutionary mission to uplift the global consciousness. To, as Prabhupada told us one time, he said, now all of my European and American disciples, of course, there was no Indians in those days, just Americans and Europeans. That was the whole movement. So he said, to all of my American and European disciples, you all should become guru and deliver the whole world. So how could we possibly do that? We're having a hard time even saving ourselves. You know, even getting up in the morning is a struggle for many of us. Getting up early for Mangal Arati is a struggle. Some even don't do that. It's difficult to get up early. So we're struggling in so many ways with our own senses. So how can we possibly come to the platform of having a revolutionary impact on this planet as described in this verse? That is by coming to the platform of complete obedience to the bona fide spiritual master. Coming in disciplic succession. That is the system. By being completely surrendered to our spiritual master, totally surrendered, whatever order he gives me, I carry that out. You see? Prabhupada explains in his purport in Srimad Bhagavatam, the disciple is always thinking of the order received from his spiritual master. Not only is he thinking, but he is worshipping that order. And he's always thinking of how to successfully execute it. So if we take this mood of humble submission to our spiritual master and the previous acharya, we take this spirit of complete humble submission, understanding we are very disqualified, then we will become instrumental. Just as Arjuna was instrument in the hands of Krishna, we are meant to be instrument in the hand of our spiritual master and the previous acharyas. So if we become like this, then that is then we actually can exemplify what's described in the spirit. We'll be able to inspire everyone. The whole planet we can inspire to take up Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada explains that in 5 days, in his books he has written, in 5 days this movement can spread all over the whole world. 5 days. So it is up to us simply to become actual acharyas, as described here. In this way, render the greatest service to the suffering humanity. As Srila Prabhupada told us, Shishi Gaur Nitya Kija. As Srila Prabhupada told us, in America he told us, he said that if you actually feel for your countrymen, then you just try to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. They are dying. The way Prabhupada said it was so potent. You could sense Prabhupada's genuine compassion for the people of the country. You could sense it. He was feeling so sorry for them that they are languishing, being tortured by the modes of nature. Unnecessarily, just because of foolishness. Nothing but foolishness. So that is the position in the whole world. It is simply foolishness, that's all. When you really come down to the essence of everything, actually everyone would want to be a devotee. The whole planet. Every person. This planet would like to be a devotee. But they just don't understand it. They're so much covered by ignorance. But if that ignorance can be removed, then everybody will become a devotee. The whole planet will become devotees. So that's why it's so important, distributing books, explaining to people how to follow the books, explaining to them what the books mean. Even people who are trying to follow this Krishna consciousness movement, they have so much confusion. I get so many emails every day. People ask me, these are people who have already made a commitment to be devotees of Krishna, but yet they have so much confusion still. How do we know there's, one man wrote me today from Israel, how do we know there's a spiritual reality? I mean, he's initiated even. That he's asking, how do we know that there's actual, what's the proof that there's a spiritual reality beyond the material reality? He wants to know. So this knowledge is very important, to actually know things as they are, to actually know for certain that there's a spiritual reality beyond this, you know, behind, rather, the curtain of this material existence. The average materialistic person, he takes this material energy to be the all in all. He doesn't realize it's simply a curtain. And behind that curtain is a wonderful spiritual existence, eternal, full of knowledge and full of love. Just imagine there's some theater, you know, there's a beautiful curtain with all kinds of, you know, beautiful paintings, and somebody's sitting there, they're totally absorbed in the curtain, they don't want you to open the curtain because they become so attached to seeing what's on the curtain. But you can say, this is just a dim reflection of what lies behind the curtain. Why don't you just let us, we'd like to open the curtain now so you can see what's behind it. They say, no, this curtain is so wonderful. You see, birth, death, old age and disease, illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, gambling. These are just a dim, perverted reflection on the curtain, which of what's actually beyond the curtain, behind it. So we have to, by our pure absorption in Krishna consciousness, we have to inspire people to have faith that there's something beyond this material existence. See, that's our duty as preachers. We have to be so sincerely and genuinely absorbed in devotional service that just by our association, people will feel, yes, there is something beyond this material world. There's something beyond it. If people can have, that's where it all begins, you see, Shraddha. The whole process of spiritual perfection begins with Shraddha. Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartana Vritti. In this way, Nishta, Ruchi, in this way, Asakti, Bhava and Prem. One gradually comes to perfection, but it all begins with faith. So this we have to, by our examples, by our demeanor, by our speech, by our actions, it is our duty to inspire faith in the hearts of humankind that there is something beyond this material existence. That's our duty. So we have to have the first thing we have to do is have absolute conviction ourselves. We must have absolute conviction, unflinching faith. That shloka, yasya deve para bhaktir, tata deve tata garam, tasyaiti yatita prakara, tasyaiti pritika yata prakashante mahatmana. Only unto those souls who have unflinching faith in the words of Guru and the words of Krishna are all the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. So, unflinching faith. Very, very solid faith. The guards at Buckingham Palace in the UK, they're very famous for being unflinching. They, you know, they have big fur hats and they stand there in their fancy uniform. You can go up and go like this and they don't flinch. They just, you can't distract them, no matter what you do. Even some naked girl walks by, you know, unflinching. They're trained to be unflinching in the way they stand there. So we have to be even more, that's superficial, of course, in their mind. The mind is dancing here, dancing there. But we have to be unflinching, not only externally, but also internally. Our minds have to be completely unflinching. They don't dance this way. Oh, Maya, Krishna, maybe Maya, little Maya is okay, you know. A little sense gratification, after all, I'm just a young devotee right now, and you know, got a whole life ahead of me. A little sense gratification is okay now, you know. Later on I'll get more serious. That's another foolishness. Maharaj Yudhisthira is very kindly enlightened us in this regard. At every moment, countless numbers of living entities are being dragged to the court of Yamaraj. But those who are remaining here, they think, oh, I will live a very long time. There is nothing more wonderful than this. You see? Ahani, ahani, bhutani, ganchantiya yamalayam, shesha stavaram ichchami, kim macharya mataha padam. You see? There's nothing more amazing than this phenomenon. So we should not allow ourselves to indulge in that illusory way of thinking. We have to understand the absolute seriousness of becoming fully fixed in pure bhakti right now. Time and tide wait for no man. We don't know how much longer we have to live in this body. Death can come at any minute. So let us now become very, very, very serious You may say, but come on, that's too morose. That's depressing. I mean, come on, Sankarshan Prabhu, what are you trying to do? Ruin my day? It's too depressing. No. This is liberating. This will take you beyond this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that we are simply a messenger boy on behalf of Prabhupada. This philosophy will absolutely destroy all anxiety, all ignorance. It'll completely obliterate all of it. This will bring us to the platform of pure transcendental bliss. Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kamshati samaksraveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. You see? This is enlightening wisdom. This is liberating wisdom. And its practical application is astoundingly wonderful, beyond our wildest dreams. One who actually experiences transcendence, pure transcendence, relishes beyond what anyone can even imagine at every minute. One of my students wrote the other day that there's some neophyte devotee who can't give up, not initiated, you know, practicer of Krishna consciousness, you cannot give up smoking marijuana. What can I tell them? This was one girl in Czechoslovakia. She was wondering, what can I tell this person? I can tell him, well, if you smoke and you can't get initiated, if you smoke marijuana, you can't get initiated. That's all she could think to tell him. And she went, but that didn't convince me. He said, well, I don't want to get initiated, so what's the problem? She said he's a really good kirtan leader. Everyone, they like him to lead kirtan. But he has this one bad habit, he smokes marijuana. She said, what to tell him? Well, the fact is that if we try to artificially get high, all we're doing is we're turning off our natural ability to get high. So actually to take any artificial means of, you know, so-called consciousness elevation is sheer idiocy. Because all you're doing is turning off your ability to naturally be on a very high level of transcendental bliss. This soul, in his original pure consciousness, is tasting unlimited nectar at every second. So, any attempt to enjoy on the material plane is simply the more we try to enjoy the material plane, the more we are distancing ourselves from the original, natural, pure, unlimitedly ecstatic consciousness of the spirit soul. So that's why we're not being cruel to ourselves by restricting our sense enjoyment. Some people think, why are you so cruel to yourself? You know, you're young, women are attracted to you, or men are attracted to you, why are you not enjoying your senses? They think we're stupid not to be enjoying sex pleasure, is it? What kind of fools are you, Hare Krishna, anyway? You Hare Krishnas. You're young, you could be enjoy. But actually, this is the intelligent position, this Krishna consciousness position. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. This is actual intelligence. Because we are freeing ourselves from all of those things which delude and force the living being to suffer. The devotee doesn't want to enjoy this material nature. Because he knows as soon as he tries to enjoy the material nature, what happens? He gets slapped. Karmi, when some material thing comes, he gets so excited. Some enjoyment comes, he gets so excited. Bubbly is the word. He becomes very excited. And then the misery comes and becomes very depressed. But in Krishna consciousness, we want to be equipoised. When things are, when some wonderful big victory comes, we take it, all right, Krishna is blessed. Very nice. This is a very nice example in this regard. Srila Prabhupada was struggling to find someone to publish his Bhagavad Gita manuscript. Couldn't find anyone. He even had a famous author at the time, Allen Ginsberg. He was trying to get the help Prabhupada get his Bhagavad Gita manuscript published. Nobody wanted to touch it. Prabhupada was giving the project to different disciples. He had Rai Ram Prabhu try to do it. He was unsuccessful. It was going around, and finally, no one could do it. Finally, he gave it to Brahmananda. And Brahmananda Prabhu was thinking, what's the use? You know, he was trying this, trying that. No one was interested. But then one day, a letter came. And on the letterhead, it was Macmillan Company, which is a major publisher in New York City. And so some employee in Macmillan Company had heard about the Happening album, you know, the original recording, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, that album. And he ordered it. It's a mail order thing, you know, you send in the money and they mail it out. Prabhupada said, personally deliver it. And Prabhupada told Brahmananda, and you tell them my spiritual master has a Bhagavad Gita manuscript, he would like to publish it. So Brahmananda, he didn't really, you know, he just said, all right, Prabhupada has told me to do that. And he was totally, you know, skeptical that it would ever get published, because they had failed at every attempt. But Prabhupada told him to go there, so he did. So he went to meet this man. He was thinking, well, there's some hope. But he turned out the man was not in the publishing department. He's just an accountant. Oh, what's the use, you know? So he was sitting there. He delivered the record to the man. And then all of a sudden the door opens, and in walks this someone else. And Brahmananda shook his hand and he says, I have a spiritual master from India and he has a Bhagavad Gita manuscript he would like to publish. And the man said, oh? That's just what we're looking for. We have the Quran, we have this, but we have no Bhagavad Gita. You have a guru from India? He has a manuscript, Bhagavad Gita? Yes, we'll publish it. He hadn't even seen the manuscript. He already agreed to publish it. And Brahmananda couldn't believe it. He was just like so excited. He was like flying high. You know, he just like, he got on the subway, came back to tell Prabhupada. He was so excited. And Prabhupada was just like completely, like, you know, all right. He knew it was going to happen. It was not a big, Prabhupada didn't get all excited and jumping up and down or anything like that. He was, oh, very good. Took it in a very, you know, yeah, all right, Krishna's mercy. So this Prabhupada showed in every action, Prabhupada showed how to be transcendental. Some fabulous, wonderful thing happens, Krishna's mercy. Even some bad thing happens, so-called bad thing. The pure devotee sees it is also Krishna's mercy. Bhaktivinoda Thakura has written a very nice song. He explains that the suffering, if the devotee can satisfy the Lord by his suffering, then the devotee is happy in that suffering condition. So if devotee can suffer and relish that suffering because it's pleasing Krishna, then how can he ever be miserable? If even in this, the whole point is, yes, he's doing everything for Krishna. So even if he's in a suffering condition, that's all right. If by this suffering condition I can please Krishna, then that's very good. Just like one time I got arrested for the heinous crime of distributing Back to Godhead magazine in the parking lot. And I knew that Prabhupada was very pleased with me. I spent 36 hours in jail, and I relished every minute of it, because I knew that Prabhupada was so happy with me that I had, you know, I had risked, taken the risk of going out to distribute his magazines, and just whatever comes, all right. And even if I'm arrested, all right. So in this way, a devotee actually becomes happy in all conditions. The good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly. He sees all of it as Krishna's mercy. He never becomes depressed. He's always enlivened. Because he's just trying to please Krishna at every minute, with every thought, with every word, and with every deed. So we can stop here and ask if there's any questions. And speak up, because I'm hard of hearing. Yes?
Thanks for your wonderful lecture.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your wonderful lecture. Mm-hmm. My question was, you was telling, you must see the absolute necessity to become Krishna conscious.
Mm-hmm.
But how you avoid to become fanatic?
How?
How you avoid to be fanatic?
Yes. Fanaticism is described very nicely by Srila Prabhupada. Fanaticism, religion and philosophy are two things. The religion without philosophy is fanaticism. And philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So the way to avoid fanaticism is to be very fixed in Srila Prabhupada's books. You have to study these books and know these books. If you know Prabhupada's books very well, then you'll never be a fanatic. If you really know, you carefully read and understand, and you clarify your understanding, you confirm it by hearing from senior devotees also. Because someone can read the books and misunderstand also. That's why Prabhupada actually said attending classes is more important than reading. Of course, both are important. We need to verify we need to see that I have the proper understanding by attending classes on Prabhupada's books. If one is very well grounded in this knowledge, then there's no question of fanaticism. Fanaticism is one who, you know, has a half-baked, as they call it, you know, halfway understanding of the philosophy, and then he misapplies it in so many ways. That's a fanatic. But Prabhupada was not fanatical. But who could be more dedicated? Fanaticism is, you know, means he has a very shallow understanding of Krishna consciousness. But someone who has very deep, deep, deep understanding of Krishna consciousness is completely beyond fanaticism. So if one, therefore, one simply has to develop a very deep understanding of these teachings. And then one will not be fanatical. Any other question? Yes?
How do you avoid doing things not on your level?
Like, speak up.
Sorry. How do you avoid doing things that are not on your level? How do you avoid doing things which are not, avoid, you know? you are not on that level.
Yes, you have to. One has to understand what is your position. Where are you situated? Everyone has to understand. There's three different types of relationships. There are devotees who are more advanced than us, equally advanced and less advanced. One has to be able to see that difference. Those who are more advanced, we offer our obeisances to them. We were very eager to hear and learn from them and serve them. Those who are equally advanced, we befriend them. We share our realizations with them. Those who are less advanced, we are very merciful and we try to help them advance in Krishna consciousness. So one has to become expert to know the difference. And if you don't know the difference, then you should understand that you should see everyone is more advanced than you're safe. If you're not sure. That's Prabhupada taught us like that. That's why we address everyone very respectfully, Prabhu, in this way, Master. Take a humble position. I am your servant. Yes.
If we spoke about fanatism, how we should handle it on the private level and on the organization level?
Fanaticism on a person-to-person level, on the organizational level?
How should we handle it as a person, as also as an organization?
That is actually answered by this verse of the Bhagavad Gita that we're studying tonight. You have to be yourself an ideal example of someone who is beyond fanaticism. And then by your example, others will be inspired. You can inspire others. If others are fanatical and you are not, and if you are, you actually develop the qualities described here in this verse, then by your association they will be inspired. The organization is nothing but a combination of individuals. It's not some entity out there on its own. The institution of ISKCON is itself simply a combination of individuals. So if you can inspire one individual by a non-fanatical example, you can inspire another individual, another individual, another individual. ISKCON is actually you and me, really. ISKCON is you. And it's you and you and you and you. It's us. It's not something beyond us, it is us. We are ISKCON, ISKCON is us. So what we are is what ISKCON is. So if one thinks ISKCON is fanatical, well, then stop being fanatical yourself. Purify your own heart completely. And that will have an impact, as described here, on the whole society. The simple thing. Whatever a great man performs, common men follow. All the world pursues whatever exemplary acts he sets by exemplary act. So if you see some deficiency in the society, then Prabhupada would advise. I remember one Brahmacharini, she wrote Prabhupada a letter. She said, "Prabhupada, I'm living with my mother. They didn't like the temple. They were mismanaging." Prabhupada said, "You should go back and you should rectify." So it's our duty, if we see the society is deviating, then we should be the ideal example to inspire the society to not deviate in this way. Don't think that Krishna cannot empower you to have an impact on the society. He can, and he will, if you become ideal devotee. He will do that. He's waiting. He wants you to do that, actually. He wants you to become a great man who can inspire the whole world by exemplary acts. He's just waiting. So do that. That's the instruction of Krishna. I'm just repeating it. Next question. Yes.
Sometimes it's homeless people or a little bit crazy come to temple. They won't come inside, take some prasadam. How to act in this situation?
How to?
Some homeless people come to the temple or some street beggars or whoever comes to the temple for prasadam. So how to handle it?
How to handle it?
What to do?
This is philosophically, there's an end. This is a practical managerial question. The local management has to decide because there's so many factors. I remember in Houston, we used to have a thing where we had all these bums coming. You have to just understand how to deal with it according to the practicality. I really can't say without knowing the particular. This is a managerial issue. It becomes a thing where you have, 500 bums on, there every day. You really have to see what the deal is. It depends on the circumstance. Our position as a society is to give mercy to everyone, that no one within 30 kilometers of the temple should go hungry. But if by giving out free food at the temple, intelligent people don't want to come there anymore because there's all these, winos crowding around the door, then you may have to have a food for life center a couple of blocks away or something where you feed all the bums there. It's just that, these are practical things. Depends on the circumstance.
When they used to bring food to the temple, they would have to feed the bums, they would harass the temple devotees also.
In Houston?
No, in Toronto.
In Toronto.
Yeah,
you have to deal with the practicality. I mean, if you're attracting the bums and they're stealing from the temple, you have to just see. You have to deal with the practical. This is up a managerial concern, but the temple president, the devotees have to decide what's practical. I'm not here long enough to know the practicalities, all the ramifications involved with it to give you a specific answer for ISKCON Amsterdam. But our principle is to feed everyone within 30 kilometers of the temple in Prabhupada's order.
Sometimes the bums will become angry, they throw the prasadam right there and they do so many things.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, in America, the big thing is people will stand on the side of the road and the sign will work for food. And then we just gave him the food and he threw it on the ground. He wanted money. So buying cigarettes and liquor. We gave him wholesome food and he just threw it. So you have to, you have to see the practicality of the situation. Any other question? Yeah.
Example, could you please enlighten us a bit for the upcoming marathon?
Enlighten
for marathon.
Oh, a book marathon. Yes. A book marathon means we have to open the floodgate. Lord Chaitanya's mercy is there in unlimited quantity. And the whole world is dying of thirst. So we have the water to inundate all of them. So we just have to open the floodgates and let the mercy flow. Let everyone get a book. Everyone should have these books. This is our duty. It's our duty to flood the world with the Prabhupada books. It's like when I took my guru vows. That was one of the vows I had to take, that I would dedicate my life to flooding the world with Prabhupada books. There's nothing more important. Because when they have these books, then there will be that moment when they will be in the right inquiring mood and they will read the book. It will have a very, then Prabhupada will have a very, very powerful impact on their consciousness. There are history after history. I have one of my disciples, Bhakti Vinod Das, in America. He's Indian. He just graduated from an engineering degree. and he got a job. But he's inspired to distribute books. We didn't know how, so I said, go to distributebooks.com. Our Vaisheshika Prabhu has made a very nice webpage, distributebooks.com. So I said, you go to that page and follow the instructions. So he did that. Now he goes out regularly when he gets off work. He'll go to a college campus and distribute books. In a small town in Alabama, he's distributing books. And one lady came out of the library. She bought 8 books, and now her life is being transformed. She was interested in studying Vedic knowledge, and then but she didn't know anyone in that town. But then he approached her. And now she's chanting japa. She wants to follow our regulated principles. So that's the real fruit of book distribution. It's not some numbers or I have a big score, so much dollars collected. That's good. But the real thing is the people who are going to be touched by these books, how it's going to turn their lives around. They were going down to the animal kingdom, and now they're going to go back to Godhead. You see? We have to understand why we're distributing the books. We're trying to save these people from going to hell. And these books will do that. They have the power, they have the potency, they have the Shakti. Prabhupada is fully present in each book. And they are getting Prabhupada right there in their home. So, there's nothing more important than distributing books. Prabhupada said that everyone should go on the Sankirtan party as soon as possible. So everyone should be and have the spirit of book distribution, distributing Prabhupada's books. If you can't do it full-time, do it part-time. In the U.S., they have a nice program, even for people who are too shy to approach someone. They have what's called Weekend Warriors program, where the temples will set up book tables at different spots around the city, and everyone can go out and man a book table on Saturday. And they get the whole temple to go out. People who have jobs and families, they go out too and do books. And everyone, it's a big enlivening thing. The whole temple will get absorbed in book distribution. This is our temple there in Silicon Valley, San Jose, California. Vaisheshika Prabhu organizes a very nice program where the whole temple has regular book distribution marathon once a month. And the devotees are very enlivened. So actually there's nothing more enlivening than distributing a book. If you can distribute one of Prabhupada's books, you feel like you've conquered an empire. I mean, it's really a wonderful thing, the feeling of distributing a book to someone is the supreme bliss. I remember when we were in Miami, we had a Harinam going up down the street. The other side of the street there was a book distributor. This was when the book distribution first started in America. In the early days, if we could sell someone a Back to Godhead magazine for a quarter, we thought we were doing really big. And that was nice, but all the books were sitting in the warehouse. Nobody was distributing them. Prabhupada had them printed. George Harrison donated $17,000. And all these Krishna books were sitting there in the cases, and no one knew how to sell one. But then one day, the devotees had some Krishna book, and they didn't have any gas money, and they convinced, somehow they got gasoline and they gave the Krishna book, and then they got this idea they could actually sell the Krishna books. So anyway, I remember one day one of the devotees from San Francisco, which was the original book distribution temple in ISKCON, where they really got into it. The first temple they got into was San Francisco. Devotees from San Francisco were across the street distributing Krishna books, big hardbound Krishna books to people. And I saw the book distributor, I forget his name, but one of my godbrothers, he distributed a Krishna book to someone. And he was jumping up and down in ecstasy. After distributing a Krishna book, he was so enlivened. He was tasting so much nectar, he just had to jump up and down in ecstasy after distributing a Krishna book. So actually there's no greater ecstasy than book distribution. I remember I participated in one big, big marathon back in around 74 or 75. We went all out. I mean, it was all out. You know, we would stay out late. It was just complete, total marathon consciousness. You know, you just come back, get a little sleep, and go back out again. Stupid book. And it was austere, but it was a lot of austerities, especially for those of us who were not full-time book distributors, who did other services. We weren't used to going out all hours, you know, in the cold, and so many situations. But at the end of that marathon, it was so wonderful. Prabhupada wrote a letter to all of us. And he quoted that verse, that mahatmanastumam bharata davim purktamashrataha bhajanyananyamanaso gyatamutaramam yuyam. Prabhupada was accepting us as mahatmas because we had gone on a book distribution marathon. He accepted us as mahatmas who were unprotected by the spiritual energy. And I felt so good. Maybe I'm, you know, feeling myself a creepina, but now Prabhupada, he's accepting us as mahatmas because he went out to distribute his books. So Prabhupada so much appreciated this book distribution. He accepts those who go out to book distribution, Prabhupada sees them as mahatmas, great souls. So be a mahatma, go out and book distribution. Don't be a duratma, hiding in the closet somewhere. Be merciful. You have gotten the mercy, now you must share the mercy. Any other questions?
Yes. Is it good to distribute books for free in certain circumstances?
Sometimes it can be done. But one has to be an expert judge of time, place and circumstances. It's a general principle. If they give some money, then they will take it very seriously. I have to get my money's worth because I paid for that book, therefore I'm going to read it because I paid for it. So just to hand out books freely everywhere, whimsically, we see they end up in the trash can. We did that sometimes. We would just do these huge blitzkriegs, giving free books to everyone. We look in the garbage can, and, you know, out on the sidewalk, you know, all these books in the garbage can. Now, of course, in a certain circumstance that you may do. Just like we did we were just in Mexico on one radio show, and the radio announcer was so nice, so much appreciating this movement. So much glorifying and appreciating. We gave him a free Bhagavad Gita, a gift. He facilitated us, you know, letting us preach to tens of thousands of people all over, you know, northern Mexico and southern Texas.
His question was also, where is Hare Krishna now? Because when he was a young boy,
he used to see the Harinam party. He loved the Harinam party as a young boy. Now he's wondering, where are you now? I don't see you anymore, standing and dancing on the streets. He remembers from the 70s when he was a small boy, the big Harinam parties in Monterrey, Mexico. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So he was very much appreciating it. We gave him. So in some circumstances, yes, we can give free. But you have to be a good judge of time, place and circumstance to know who to give and who not to give free. It's a general principle. When they pay, they want to get their money's worth, so they will read it. Yes.
You were talking about getting serious and that you can die at any time and that you really have to go for it. But what about finishing your school or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
You said you were thinking that you need to become serious because you can die any moment. What about finishing the school?
What about?
Finishing the education.
Finishing the education, yes. You have to work it from both ends. Is the answer. You have to live as if you're going to die at any minute, and you have to also live as if you're going to live for, you know, 70 or 80 years. You have to work it from both ends. If absolutely I was going to die, if my only consideration was that I can die at any minute, then, you know, why would I even bother wanting to pay my rent? because I'm going to drop dead in a second. Why even bother paying the rent? You know. So you have to live as if you're going to live for 60, 70, 80 years on the one hand, and at the same time as if you could die at any minute. You have to do both. That's the answer. Work it from both ends. Live as if you can live to be 60, 70, 80, or you know, whatever, and also that you could die at any minute. Live in such a way that you got it covered either way. You got both things covered. If you live to 80, you're covered. If you live for another 80 seconds, you're covered. Work it from both sides. Cover both things by the way you conduct your life. That's the answer.
Okay, so you should not think like, oh, I'm just going to stop the education, I'm just going to live in the temple for a home life and be dependent on...
Actually, one, you should consult your spiritual master and see what he wants you to do. Really, that's the solution. That's the position. Whatever my guru wants me to do, that's what I should do. It may be that the spiritual master will order you to continue your education. That may be useful. You may be able to render better service by having an education in the long run. So the real thing is whatever your spiritual master tells you to do. If he tells you to be a full-time pujari, a book distributor, you do, or a cook, or whatever, you do that. If he tells you to get a college education, you do that. Whatever your spiritual master orders you to do, that's what you should do. That's the answer. Huh? Well, then you have to have a guru. Your first business then is to become fixed up and have a spiritual master so you can surrender to him. Because that's how we surrender to Krishna, through the medium of guru. Your first business is to become fixed in chanting 16 rounds, following our principles, and take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That's the first thing. And then whatever he tells you to do.
Until that time?
Hmm?
Who do you surrender to until that time? Because there are a lot of people who are more advanced and they give different opinions in this matter.
Different opinion.
She says, until when we find a bona fide guru and surrender to the guru, then until then, well, because we got so many seminaries.
Until then, I will give you an instruction. Till then, go to finish your college studies. until you choose your guru, stay in college, finish it. Okay.
Spiritual master,
and when I meet another one,
I think, no, this is my spiritual master. What to do with this?
Hmm?
He says, whoever I meet, I think that he is my spiritual master.
Oh, that's nice. Siksha guru, you can have actually one who is Krishna conscious. He has thousands of gurus.
But then, how she can decide who is my guru to take
initiation? For Diksha, that's, well, see, Siksha guru, you can, even the dog is our Siksha guru.
Huh?
How will you decide? Yes, it used to be easy in the old days when Prabhupada was the only initiating guru. I mean, it was so easy, you know. It's automatic. Prabhupada's my guru. But now, ISKCON used to be just like one store, but now ISKCON's a shopping mall. You see, it's a difference. Now ISKCON, you walk into the ISKCON and it's a huge shopping mall. You got, you know, the Jaya Bataka store here, you got the Gopal Krishna, you got the Radhanath Swami, you got Sankarshan Das Adhikari, you got so many shops in this huge mall. And they all look good, you know. And they all have good merchandise. And it's a little bewildering, you know. What do you do, you know? Well, you can have fun. I mean, shop around. Have fun. Enjoy your shopping, you know. And finally, you just shop around until you find what shop works the best for you, you know. Have fun shopping until you can check out all the stores, and then by shopping around, you'll see what shop is the best for you, you know. You'll find out. Just keep shopping around until you finally narrow it down. This is the shop for me.
How do we shop?
How do you shop? Well, you're shopping right now. You're right now in the Sankarshan Das Adhikari shop. So, you know, you get, so you attend the classes, you know, you can hear lectures, read, there's so many books out there by gurus and tapes, and you can meet the disciples. You can also judge by seeing the disciples too. You can judge a tree by its fruits. So you can, you know, you check out the disciples of the guru. You can check out the guru by meeting him, by, you know, emailing him, you know, checking out his, you know, all this stuff related with him. This way, it's not difficult. Go on the internet, you know, you type in the guru's name on the internet, on Google. Whichever gurus you're interested in, just type their name in Google. Of course, you'll see a lot of anti-stuff from the Ritviks and all this too, if you go on the internet. But you also see the good stuff. Yeah.
Regarding this, was a nice small booklet that was published by Gogovinda Maharaj, where he was named How to Find a Guru. But the nice thing is,
what does he advise?
He said the nice thing that he said is that actually it's illusion that we can find the guru. The guru is actually finding us.
That's also there.
He said that we think that that's we are the seer, but we are actually not the seer. We are the object to be seen by the guru.
Now, what he's saying is confirmed by Prabhupada. Prabhupada said this, because that Hayagriva and Kirtanananda, Howard and Keith, they had gone to India seeking a guru. In fact, they'd even gone on a Jala Dhuda to India, working on it, I guess, to get the free passage. They worked on the ship, probably. But they went to India, they didn't find a guru. And they came back, well, we didn't find a guru. But then Hayagriva, or Howard at the time, was walking down Houston Street in Manhattan, and there he was, Prabhupada was standing on the street. And Hayagriva was just dumbfounded. He was absolutely amazed. New York City was like a huge monster roaring, you know, rawr. You've been in New York, it's heavy. So this Hayagriva, he said Prabhupada was just like a famous actor in a famous movie. He was emanating a cool tranquility that was situated far, far beyond the metropolis that roared all around him. So, this is actually true. When you're really ready, you can shop, but when you're really ready to have a spiritual master, then he'll find you, and you know he'll grab you. He'll just grab you. By his words, you'll be captivated. You'll know this is my spiritual master. When you're actually ready, Krishna will send the spiritual master to you, and you'll know this is it. This is my spiritual master. His words capture me. They enter my heart and they capture me. I know this is him because I just got captured by his word. So shopping in the meantime, but when you're really ready, you won't have to shop anymore.
Shopping in a sense is grueling because you do not know what to look for.
Now the fact is, when you're really ready to surrender, I know in my own life, I went through a period when I thought I was spiritual, but I really wasn't. When I got to the point where I knew I had to just do what God wanted me to do and nothing else, I had to fully, fully surrender my total existence to whatever God wanted me to do. That's when Guru came into my life. I had so many opportunities to hear Prabhupada, I wouldn't go. I refused to go to meet Prabhupada. I was invited by the devotees. Our guru will be here tonight, come in here. I wouldn't go. Twice I turned down a chance to meet Prabhupada. Because I wasn't ready. But when I was ready, then I was captured. So when you're ready, When you're really ready, the spiritual master will speak and you know this is it. This is my spiritual master. I've met him. Just like Prabhupada, when he met his guru, he knew it. He didn't shop around. He argued first. Who will hear our message? You're saying to spread Krishna Ganya's movement? Who will hear our message? We are a dependent nation. We are under British rule. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura smashed his argument. And Prabhupada walked away from that meeting. This is my guru. He knew him. Prabhupada said practically he initiated. His diksha was not for another 11 years. But he had, that moment actually, he accepted Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati as his spiritual master. So there is formal initiation and there is practical initiation. Prabhupada was practically initiated in that first meeting. And he was always meditating. He was constantly thinking of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura after that meeting. So that's a very good point you brought.
Isn't it that the spiritual master comes? It is just that how we take the guidance and instructions, then we will know. How we absorb the teachings that the spiritual master is given, because the spiritual master is one. It's a different person. The message of Krishna is given. So depending on how we taking the message, then we can understand the spiritual master.
Can you clarify your question?
The question is this. The spiritual master, Adi Guru, and the other representative of Krishna, there are many different persons, but there is, spiritual master is only one category. So, if we are absorbing the message properly, then we can understand the Guru.
Yeah. When we actually become connected through that person with Krishna, then we know this is him. This is him.
By hearing the message from the spiritual
master. When you contact the spiritual master and you actually feel, yes, now I'm connected. Now I'm really connected. Then you'll know this is my spiritual master. That's right. Any other questions? Yeah. You want memories of the Radha Damodara?
Just a little bit, if you memorize some Buddhist sutras from days in Radha Damodara Party.
I was in the Radha Damodara Party before it became the big book distribution juggernaut that it became. When I joined it, it was... I joined it before it was even the Radha Damodara Party. It became... I was traveling with His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj on one bus. And he named it the Radha Damodara Traveling Sankirtan Party. After we'd been on the road for... We left New York, and then we drove all... By the time we got to Florida, that's when the name came... I first saw the name manifest. But it was a very nice thing. We had... There was a few of us who were on the bus serving Radha Damodara, and we were doing a college preaching programs, and then there was also a crew going out on book distribution every day, and I remember how enlivened they were coming home. There would be wonderful, wonderful deity worship. This isn't specifically book distribution, but it's Radha Damodara Traveling Sankirtan Party, if that's all right. He wants some book distribution thing. I just remember how Vishnu Jamaraj, he would massage the deities with sandalwood. Then he would come out of the curtain and we would all smell the, take the bishadam from his hands. It was so wonderful. That wonderful sandalwood that had been rubbed all over Radha Damodara now, that was left on his hands. And we would smell from his hand. So enlivening thing. So there was a very nice balance between deity worship and book distribution when I was on the party. It was a very, very wonderful balance between the preaching and the deity worship. The deity worship was ecstatic and the preaching was ecstatic. It was all connected. Actually, distributing books is actually a form of deity worship. What is that verse? Samit panihi shrotiyam brahmanishtam. The disciple's duty is to bring firewood because in those days the guru, he would do agni hotra yagya, fire yagya. So the disciple, he brings firewood to guru. That is his service, to bring firewood. So we what is our firewood? We are doing sankirtan yagya. It's a different sort of fire. So our firewood is to bring conditioned souls. That is our samit panahi shrotiyam brahmanishtam. That is ours. We are bringing the conditioned souls. So how do we bring them? Through book distribution. So that is how we worship the deity. The yagya that we do for Krishna is to bring the conditioned souls. So the book distribution is our way of bringing them. You see, it's the way of bringing the conditioned soul to the sankirtan yagya.
You were not under book distribution.
Yeah, when it became the time when Tamal Krishna Maharaj joined, I was in our Gainesville temple. I was doing college preaching. And that the Radha-Damodar party came to Gainesville and stayed. They loved our temple. It was very Radha-Damodar traveling Sankirtan party friendly temple. In fact, they built some of the buses in the backyard of our temple. Those famous buses, you know, were converted, you know, highway buses, commercial highway buses were bought by Tamal Krishna Maharaj and turned into traveling temples. They did that in the backyard of our temple. So it was, we had a lot of association with, I remember when Tamal Krishna Maharaj came, I'd never met him, I had heard about him. Of course, he and Vishnu Jan Maharaj had joined ISKCON together in San Francisco. They, as hippies, they were close friends, living together. And so, I knew Vishnu Jan, he made me a devotee, Vishnu Jan Maharaj. So then I had heard about Tamal Krishna, but I'd never met him because he was in India. But then they came with the Radha-Damodar party to Gainesville. And I remember first things I heard Tamal Krishna Maharaj say was, he said Vishnu Jan Maharaj was famous for being able to eat a lot of prasadam and without falling asleep. He'd go in and chant ecstatic. He'd eat huge prasadam and then do a big kirtan after them. He wouldn't just go to sleep. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, yeah, Vishnu Jan Maharaj can eat me under the table. I'm just a small fry. That means that, you know, he'll be up singing and dancing, and if I ate as much as he ate, I'd be laying under the table, completely wiped out. He can eat me under the table. I'm just a small fry. That was the first thing I heard Tamal Krishna Maharaj say. So I appreciated that because he was, in a joking way, he was, you know, glorifying Vishnu Jan Maharaj. So I remember they set up their headquarters in Florida at the time. They had an amazing system. There was no internet or email in those days. And there was no cell phones either. So how do you manage, you know, a party of 100 brahmacharis all over America distributing books from one in a centralized way? There's no cell phones. So what Tamal Krishna Maharaj did is he set up an office, and it was in, I think it was Tampa, Tampa, Florida. He had two Keshava Bharati Das Brahmachari and another Brahmachari, he set them up as the coordinating office. So every party, every evening would call from, you know, a payphone somewhere, you know. They would call in their scores and they would get orders and instructions. So it was very, very well managed. Tamal Krishna was an expert manager. He had all these different parties, but they were all reporting their scores every night and getting instructions all through his office, in this office in Tampa. And that was the whole service of those devotees, was just to coordinate. They were like an information center for all these different, you know, vans and buses all over America. But it was all coordinated. So yeah, that was one of the amazing things. We had never seen such organization as the Radharamana Traveling Sankirtan. Actually, they're starting it again now in LA. In those days, it was men only, but now women also are allowed in the Radharamana Traveling Sankirtan party. So they're just starting it up again now in Los Angeles. I just read the news. They're starting up the Radharamana Traveling Sankirtan party again. Oh yeah, there was a big competition because everybody wanted to get Prabhupada's special mercy. So he and Rameshwar were arch rivals, transcendental arch rivals. Who will distribute the most books? And they had even spies planted to see how much the other party was doing, so they could make sure they could defeat the other party. And, I mean, it was really intense competition. Who will get Prabhupada's special mercy for this marathon? And so Tamal Krishna sent Rameshwar a blank check. He said, whatever the L.A. temple gives, add $20,000 to this check, and it will clear. So Tamal was not to be defeated. And Prabhupada actually said, yes, if Rameshwar were to defeat Tamal, Tamal's heart would crack. He was really into competition. Tamal Krishna really wanted to be number one. And he was. In many ways, he was number one. In terms of preaching and organizational skills. Prabhupada was very pleased by that mood that he had of wanting to, you know, be the best, distribute the most books. And there was also a competition, another type of competition in Gainesville. Gainesville was famous in those days. They used to call it Geesville because for opulent prasadam. That was Amarendra's preaching method. You may have such opulent prasadam that nobody would think of leaving. And it worked pretty well. We had a big temple. So anyway, there was a competition, an eating competition also. The Radharamadhar party was there, and it was a competition between the Gainesville devotees and the Radharamadhar devotees. Actually, I was a Gainesville devotee. I hid during that competition. I didn't want to get sick. I forget who won. It's described in the Tamal Krishna Maharaj's book, Servant of the Servant. That competition is described. I was one of the cooks. When it came to the eating part of it, I hit out. But there was a big competition. Who can eat more prasadam? The Radharamanar boys or the Gainesville boys? Who can pack away more prasadam and keep going, you know?
Balloon belly.
Balloon belly.
The what?
Balloon belly.
Yeah. Actually, those competitions going on. Actually, in Australia, there was in Gulab Jamun contest, one Mataji was actually could outdo anyone. Yeah. There was one Mataji who could outdo all the men on Gulab Jamun.
Yeah. Simhachalam, they did also.
Huh?
In Simhachalam, Nisimakshetra, they did also one Mataji from Czech.
A Czech Mataji won, defeated everyone. So, I think we'll stop here because we want to get up. We encourage everyone to come to Mangalarti tomorrow. So we thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.